morning.
Good morning.
Would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I'll reserve 2 minutes, please. And may it please the court, Lila Silverstein on behalf of Jorge Lizarraga. Mr. Lizarraga has raised 4 issues on appeal, but I'd obviously like to focus on the issue specific to the murder conviction. That conviction should be reversed for 2 independent reasons. First, because Mr. Lizarraga was improperly prohibited from examining the detective about a witness's report that a different person killed the victim. And second, because the jury was improperly instructed that it did not have to agree unanimously as to whether the state proved the elements of felony murder or intentional murder. The first issue is very important because the contested fact at trial was the identity of the shooter. There were a lot of people at this party and a lot of witnesses at trial, but they all gave conflicting accounts of the events of that evening and completely contradictory descriptions of the shooter. For instance, 2 people said the shooter was wearing white, 2 others said the shooter was wearing black. Only 1 witness identified Jorge Lizarraga as the shooter. Another identified Hugo Vaca Valencia as the shooter. But the jury never had the opportunity to hear that evidence because that witness was deported prior to trial. So Mr. Lizarraga moved for leave to bring out that evidence through the detective, and that motion was denied. But the denial of that motion violated Mr. Lizarraga's constitutional right to present a defense.
So do you concede the testimony was hearsay?
The testimony was hearsay, although, you know, in that Ninth Circuit case, Leal del Carmen, they said that it would come in anyway under the forfeiture by wrongdoing doctrine. And that's because the government has a duty to preserve material exculpatory evidence. And normally, the remedy for a violation of that duty is dismissal of the charge, which we would obviously be happy with that remedy if the state doesn't like this alternative remedy that Mr. Stimmel offered. But at a minimum, Mr. Lizarraga should have been permitted to examine the detective about that witness's statements.
So, you've got 2 arguments, and one relates to the state's role in relationship to the deportation. And we recognize from the record there was a period of time where Mr. Val Valencia was not incarcerated. Is that correct?
So Hugo Vaca Valencia is the other suspect.
Right.
Jonathan Cervantes is the witness who said that Hugo Vaca Valencia.
Okay, so with Mr. Cervantes,
right.
There was a period of time when he is not in custody.
Right, but our position is that at the moment the state realized that he possessed material exculpatory evidence, it was their duty to preserve that witness for trial.
Well, where does that come from?
That
doesn't come from Chambers.
That comes from Valenzuela Bernal and Leila
Del
Carmen.
But those are federal cases. And in the federal cases, it's the same sovereign that deported the witness.
Well,
the state of Washington didn't deport this witness.
No, but they had a duty to preserve witness.
Is there an obligation on the part of the defendant's counsel to make a request to the prosecutor that they seek to file whatever document needs to be filed in the United States Code to keep this person from being
defense
deported?
Defense counsel had not even been appointed until 4 months after the state knew that this evidence was material and exculpatory.
Well,
and
this evidence was set forth in the amended information filed on March 31st, 2011.
Right, but the witness was
interviewed. And it's referenced in the affidavit of probable cause.
Certainly, but this witness was interviewed in December of 2010, and it's not as if Detective G interviewed this witness by himself. He interviewed this witness with the King County Deputy Prosecuting Attorney and a federal agent from the Department of Homeland Security. So as soon as this witness said that he saw the shooting and that Hugo Vaca Valencia was the shooter, the King County Deputy Prosecuting Attorney had a duty to simply turn to the federal agent sitting next to her and say, we need to keep this witness here.
Where does that duty come from?
This
is very different from Chambers.
No, this is that. So the line of cases begins with Valenzuela Bernal, which is the primary U.S. Supreme Court case I'm relying on. And in that case, The court says this type of issue is similar to the due process right or obligation of the government to preserve physical material exculpatory evidence. And so they set forth the same rules for those two types of things. Whether it's a person, a witness, or physical evidence, the government has the duty to preserve material exculpatory evidence. And when they don't do that, the usual remedy is dismissal of the charge. Now, they didn't dismiss in Valenzuela and Bernal simply because the evidence was not exculpatory. But here we know it is exculpatory, and the state knew that it was exculpatory, and the state knew that it was material, and yet they did not take any action to preserve that witness, and it's their obligation to do so. Mr. Stimmel wasn't even on the case at the time this interview occurred. In fact, Mr. Lizarraga hadn't even been charged with the crime yet. So as soon as they knew this was material exculpatory evidence, it was their duty to preserve it. And Mr. Stimmel is entitled to rely on their duty to carry out their obligation and to assume that they will.
Why is he entitled to rely on that? He's the Sixth Amendment counsel.
I'm not arguing an effective assistance
no,
to counsel.
No, but you're assigning a duty. If he wants a witness to testify, why doesn't he have to take the burden of getting the witness there, which is exactly what happened in Chambers?
If the witness had been in this country, he would
have. The witness was in this country for quite a while. Did he ever subpoena him? Did he take any steps to contact him beyond the one visit?
Well,
one visit with a prosecutor over what, 2 years? And the guy wasn't there because he was out free in the community?
No, they both went to the Federal Detention Center in January of, I don't remember the year at this point. It was 11 months before trial that they both went to the Federal Detention Center, and he wasn't there.
He'd been released.
Right. And so then he tried again in September.
So he hadn't been deported. So right then we know he's not been deported. He's out in the society somewhere.
Right, and the state knows.
So what's the state's obligation then with regard to?
The state's obligation is to tell the federal government not to deport this witness because he is necessary.
The witness who's not in their custody.
But the witness was in their custody originally.
Do they have to do that with every non-citizen potential witness that isn't in the custody of Homeland Security?
They have to do it when they know.
What's the scope of the duty?
When they know that the witness has material exculpatory evidence
and is a non-citizen,
and
in every one of those cases they have to inform Homeland Security, don't deport this person.
Certainly when they know that Homeland Security is interested in deporting that witness.
Well, but
when
he was
an
released
agent of Homeland
when they went
Security
there,
right? Is right there with them. Yes.
But he was released. He wasn't in custody anymore when they went to visit him. That was the rub.
He wasn't in custody anymore at that point, right. But apparently he was still subject to deportation because the state had never said, don't deport this person. So it's their duty to preserve the evidence. They didn't. Some remedy has to apply. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Dennis McCurdy for the State of Washington, respondent in this case. May it please the court. I am going to focus on the same issue, the due process and compulsory process issue. Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay. Now, the defendant claims the trial court could have dismissed in this case, but instead what they're asking for is saying the trial court should have admitted the statements of Jonathan Cervantes. But as this court's questions indicate, I would ask the defense, what is the rule that they propose? Because it's not the rule that comes from case law. First of all, I'd like to point out the defense says...
Well, the rule that comes from case law is that the hearsay rule cannot be combined with any other procedural rule in order to mechanistically avoid the ends of justice by depriving a defendant of relevant exculpatory testimony. That's Chambers.
Correct. But
so what, in Chambers, you had a... Mississippi had a voucher rule. If you called a witness, you couldn't impeach your own witness. And they had a hearsay rule that didn't allow for statements against penal interest. So when Chambers calls the witness who had previously admitted to committing the murder, he can't impeach him and he can't call anyone else to talk about his prior admissions. The U.S. Supreme Court says the hearsay rules are properly applied here. The voucher rule was properly applied. But it's a non-starter. He gets, under compulsory process or whatever it is that they base this on, he gets to present that evidence some way. Why isn't that the same place here?
Well, because as is quoted in there, it also says, subject to established rules of procedure and evidence designed to assure the fairness and reliability and ascertainment of guilt.
Yeah, but that's what Mississippi thought it had. It had established rules of procedure and evidence that the Supreme Court said couldn't be applied.
Well, but the Supreme Court said, no, that's not accurate, because they said the rules in that case were arbitrary and disproportionate to those purposes. If you're looking at firmly rooted evidence rules, those can still be applied. All of the case law says that. Chambers said that as well. This case, you've got a firmly established hearsay rule. You don't have a rule. For example, I think one of the cases was the rape shield law. The rape shield law has very valid purposes.
Yeah, but the federal government, he's got a compulsory process. The defendant has a compulsory process right to present this witness to testify about the exculpatory matter. There's no question about that. The federal government interfered with that by deporting the witness. Regardless of whatever the state could or could not do, the federal government's got the right to deport people, and they did. Why isn't that the sort of extraordinary circumstance that would be outside of the thought processes of those who created the hearsay rule, and therefore requires some sort of a remedy?
If you follow that line of logic, then it has no, then this case would have nothing to do with whether Cervantes was deported or not. It would simply have to do with the fact that they want inadmissible hearsay evidence into evidence.
It would have to do with the fact that the federal government deprived them of the ability to have their compulsory process right honored. They have a compulsory process right to present the witness in their defense. They can't do it because the federal government sent him elsewhere on the earth.
Well, that's when you look at Valenzuela Bernal. That's when you apply that rationale and that case law.
Yeah, but that's talking about the same sovereign. Here we've got a different situation.
Exactly.
We've got the state of Washington. It's not the same sovereign. So we've got the state procedural rules, and then we've got this totally extraneous thing that happens with the federal government deporting the witness. I'm willing to say the state can't necessarily control that. They can make a request, but they can't control it.
That's correct.
And so if they can't control guaranteeing the compulsory process, right, shouldn't there be some other remedy?
No, not a dismissal against the state.
I'm not saying a dismissal. Question the person to whom the statement was made.
Well, look at it this way. Let me give a hypo. Let's say coming into trial, the defense attorney.
Well, don't give a hypo. Why don't you stick to the facts?
I'm trying to. The case law clearly says establish rules of evidence that have the purpose of the fairness of trial, and if those rules do that, then those can be imposed. Chambers says that.
So your argument is that because this was hearsay, that it fits within that proposition related to the statement that was made in Chambers.
Absolutely, because if you didn't, then any hearsay would be admissible as long as it's material. And that's not the rule of law.
That's not so at all. Here what we have is an admission or a statement, not an admission. Chambers had an admission. It's a statement about who was the shooter. And it's one of only two or three identifiers that we have of who was the shooter. That's clearly relevant. It's clearly material. It's clearly probative.
Absolutely.
And there's no question that if he was still in the state of Washington, the utterer of that statement would be subject to the defendant's compulsory process right to come into court and say that very thing. Now, an additional sovereign has deprived the defendant of the right to present that testimony. How does the rule remain designed to prove truth under that circumstance? That's not a circumstance that would have been envisioned by the framers of the rule.
Which rule? The hearsay rule?
The hearsay rule.
Well, no, because the hearsay rule stays the same. The hearsay evidence isn't admissible because it is hearsay. It's not reliable. It's not subject to cross-examination.
It's inadmissible because it's presumed to be less reliable than evidence that isn't hearsay.
Absolutely.
But the evidence that isn't hearsay has been artificially deprived from the trial by the actions of another sovereign. So it's the best evidence that's there and subject to an argument as to whether or not it's persuasive or not. But it's clearly better on the issue than no evidence.
And I don't disagree, but what you're trying to do is combine those two things, and that's not what the case law says.
That's what Chambers did. Chambers took a perfectly legitimate hearsay rule that had existed in many states for a century and said when it's combined with this anti-voucher rule, it no longer is designed to prove true.
Right.
And so we have to have an exception under a constitutional principle.
That was the rule of admissibility of evidence at trial. It was one of their rules. And that rule itself didn't serve those purposes. We don't have that here. We don't have a competing Washington state rule that says this evidence doesn't come in besides that. My example, again, like was the rape shield law. The rape shield law had a purpose, but that purpose is not the fairness of trial. That purpose is to protect victims of rape. That would, and I think in the case law it says, that can disappear under certain circumstances where you have an interest like that and you're prevented from putting relevant admissible material evidence on trial. That's not the case here. You don't have any other rule that prevented that evidence from coming in trial that had
you do. You've got the power of the federal government to seize the witness and deport him elsewhere.
Yes. You have a sovereign that the state has no control over.
Right?
What case supports that? That's when you
Chambers.
I disagree. Chambers has.
I don't see the argument. The difference in the argument that you're making here from the argument that the counsel from Mississippi likely made in Chambers. We have rules; they're legitimate. Most of the time, they serve to produce truth in courtrooms, and we should be allowed to apply them.
But they had a rule wasn't that. We don't have a rule that you can challenge here that says it doesn't fit the purposes of the fairness of trial. Doesn't exist here. You did in Chambers. You had that secondary rule. Simply because of the fact that you can't find a witness. I mean, because really, again, I go back to under the defense theory, it wouldn't make any difference whether he was deported or not deported if he simply couldn't find him. Under the defense theory would be, I can't find him. I have the right to compulsory process, so the remedy should be I should be able to admit his hearsay.
Well, the argument is that the state had a duty once they interviewed him to ensure that he wasn't deported. What is your response to that?
Well, there's a number of aspects to that. First of all, the defense assumes that back in December of 2011 that he was deportable and that the state knew it. There's no evidence of that. In fact, 2.5 years later, he still hasn't been deported. He was in federal custody on some sort of criminal matter. He changed custody status. He's out of custody. What was the state supposed to do at that point? We can't sit there and go to the federal attorney and say, don't deport him when we don't even know if he's deportable. We can't hold him in custody for 3 years. We had an obligation to turn over discovery. We did that. We told the defense where he was, which at that point was in the King County Jail. We told him what he said. That's our obligation. There's no obligation beyond that. The only case the defense cites for that proposition is a federal case out of California, Valencia, but Valencia had a different issue. And if you remember the facts of the case, that was a case where they searched Valencia's apartment. There was another witness in the apartment, a guy named Alcala, I think is how it's pronounced, who said they found some drugs and a gun. Alcala said, that's not the defendant's gun, and he said, it's somebody else's. Less than 6 days later, that person is deported. Before Valencia is charged, before he has counsel, before he has a court hearing. Now, that's the only case the defense cites for that proposition. Now, the issue in that case, however, was not an issue of state action, number one, or bad faith or anything else. It was simply an issue of whether to apply California's material standard or the federal government's materiality standard. But in the last paragraph of the decision is the only time they talk about state action and what the state was required to do, because that was a state case. That's the defense's argument.
All right, so we will look at that.
Can I just finish the one sentence? Because what the court talked about was the fact that the state knew that witness was being deported and did not tell the defense that he was going to be deported, give them an opportunity to interview or whatever else they might not do. That doesn't exist here.
Thank you. Well, as the state acknowledges, Valencia is a state case, so this isn't just about federal cases. And Valencia really is very closely on point because, again, you have a witness who said that somebody else committed the crime, but that witness is deported prior to trial. And
well, but in Valencia, did they say that the duty was to preclude him from being, to preclude the other witnesses from being deported, or just to reveal the substance of their knowledge to the defense? What was the duty that it said was breached by the government?
It just said that the question is whether the defendant made a plausible showing that the testimony of the deported witness would have been material and favorable to his defense in ways not merely cumulative to the testimony of available witnesses. I don't know that it is clear in the case that the state necessarily knew that that witness was going to be deported, or that they had anything. They obviously didn't have anything to do with deporting that witness because they don't have the authority to deport that witness. And yet the fact that that witness was lost was held against the state, not against the defendant.
Well, but was that because the state didn't reveal knowledge of the witness, or because the state didn't take steps to keep the witnesses physically present in the United States?
Doesn't the last sentence of that opinion explain that the state gave no explanation for its failure to give the defendant or his attorney advance notice of the witness's deportation, and simply argued it's not a reasonable possibility that this witness would tend to prove the defendant's innocence?
Right, and that shows that the state did in fact have that duty, despite the fact that they're not the federal government and don't control deportation decisions.
Thank you.
Thank you.